Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Monday, July 14th, welcome to the show. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And my name is Avi Wolfman-Arendt. Cherry.
It's so nice to hear your voice, Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And you get to see my face, too.
You're doubly lucky. I get to see you.
Thanks Welcome so much. Yeah, it's very nice to be back. It's nice to have a job where you are excited to come back.
Mm-hmm.
I credit that to you and to the rest of the team.
We missed you, Avi. We're so happy you're
back. It is really nice
us.
To be here. A lot happened.
Yes.
Strike started and stopped.
You got the chance. Let me just tell you about Avi. He got the chance to miss the strike.
I was staycationing for a good chunk of it. So I did. I'm aware of what happened.
You catch the end remnants. Yeah.
It was interesting, though, too, because for some of the trip, I was camping and I was like on the road. So I was just getting the news in like bits and pieces, mm-hmm. mostly through social media, like what I could get on my phone. And I felt like it was an interesting vacation as a news consumer.
Yeah.
Because, you know, usually I'm like reading the whole article, but mm-hmm. I didn't have the capability to do that. So I was kind of getting the strike,
headlines? Yeah.
The headlines and mm-hmm. like the viral videos and stuff. It was interesting how fast it became the trash strike.
I know.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Even though many people who were striking were not working in that field.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just gives you a sense of like what people notice
and what impacts people a lot. And but you came back right on time.
I'm here
for I think the next day was like,
I'm here.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, welcome back. Yeah.
Thank you so much. On the show today, we're going to talk about a new report.
Mm-hmm.
The lead author of this report, this study, is a doctor at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. And when you see this report, it's not like any one part of it is going to shock you.
Mm-hmm.
It's the totality of it that makes it a unique study and B, pretty darn alarming.
Yeah.
These researchers looked at children's health across 170 indicators mm-hmm. spanning 16 years. And what they found is that nearly across the board, children today are less healthy than they were 20 years ago. Of course, we want to talk about how they're less healthy, why they may be less healthy. So we have the study's lead author with us today. That is the bulk of the show. We want to hear from you. Why do you think kids are less healthy than they were 20 years ago? What should we do to improve the physical and mental health of young people in the U.S.? Give us a call. I still remember the number. It's 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. If you're on YouTube, drop a comment in the chat.
And by the way, we also want to talk solutions. We ask our listeners for those solutions, but we're going to talk about that today because we all have young people in our lives that we love.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't want it to be so grim. I'm like, there has to be a way for us to turn the ship around and make our kids more healthy. So I look forward to hearing your commentary. 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And we have our trio of news stories.
Start us off, Cherry.
Yes. After nearly 2 weeks, regular trash pickup resumes today in the city of Philadelphia, just 5 days after the city and DC 33 workers reached a tentative agreement. But the saga is not over. The 9,000 members of DC 33, they are beginning to vote on that tentative deal. If a majority of the members vote yes, the deal will be ratified, which means the strike is over. We don't have to worry about that anymore. But if a majority of the members say no to the deal, the union and the city would have to go back to the drawing board, and that work stoppage, that strike, could resume. So, and by the way, if you weren't paying attention, maybe you were on vacation like Avi was.
For the record, I was paying attention.
I just
want to get that out there.
I'm teasing, Avi. But the current strike deal would give DC 33 members a 3% raise every year for the next 3 years, as well as a $1,500 bonus for the first year. There were also some other things outside of money that are also included in that. And voting on this deal would continue through July 20th, which is Sunday. That way, everybody has a chance to vote. Now, I should mention that, you know, right now, Philly's White Collar City Workers Union, which is represented by DC 47, they are currently at a standstill in their contract negotiations with the city, and those members are set to vote on whether to authorize a strike on Tuesday.
Oh my gosh. It's like whack-a-mole with strikes right now. And by the way, the Philadelphia Federation of Teachers, they've already authorized their leadership to call for a strike if they can't come to an agreement by the end of August. Remember, SEPTA workers, the main SEPTA workers union, they're on like a one-year extension. I believe that comes due in November. So there is a lot of labor strife bubbling and percolating around the region. It's not just between city workers and City Hall. It's between SEPTA board and SEPTA workers. It's between the Philadelphia School Board and teachers, educators. I mean, there's a lot happening in this space right now.
Yeah, and the crazy part is, you know, you think DC 47, those are the folks who do the white collar stuff, some professionals, secretary, like administrative assistants and other professionals. You don't feel it as much as you did with DC 33 because everybody puts their trash out, right? This is right. Something that everybody, and it wasn't like you said, it wasn't just sanitation workers, but for SEPTA to go on strike, for teachers to go on strike, I think it's more of a ripple effect than maybe DC 47. And they said they're going to take it.
Well, teachers, you'll feel that one.
You would feel that one, exactly. So
SEPTA, you feel that one.
We'll
day
see.
One.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's, it just makes you wonder, what's the common denominator? Why is all of this happening
expensive?
At once? It could be just a coincidence. Yeah. It could be, hey, we're in like this post-pandemic, post-bailout economic reality.
Yeah. And inflation.
Yeah, with inflation. So I don't know. There's lots of potential explanations, but it does seem like there's a lot of activity right now.
Yeah.
A lot of activity coming in November 2026. That's the midterm elections. And for Democrats, the road to retaking the U.S. House could very well run through Pennsylvania. Mm. Now, back in 2024, if you'll recall, Republicans carried three House districts in Pennsylvania by fewer than 2 percentage points. Razor thin margins. One of those close races was PA 10, which is located in the Harrisburg area. Republican incumbent Scott Perry barely defeated challenger Janelle Stelson. And Stelson has announced today she is taking another crack at it. She's a former TV anchor and former Republican, by the way. Announced today she's running again in 2026 for that seat held by Perry. This is a red-leaning district, but it has become increasingly purple.
Yeah, very interesting district. By the way, Trump has doubled down on Perry. He called him a MAGA warrior. And we
are very close allies.
And we've already seen Stelson sort of following the footsteps of other Democrats by pointing to Perry's vote in favor of the Big Beautiful Bill and the Medicaid cuts as saying, you know, look, you know, to lure those middle of the road Republicans and independents to her side. And the district, like you said, I mean, it's very interesting, very purple. And she's already gotten endorsements from a number of Democrats, including the lieutenant governor. She's going to be appearing with Governor Josh Shapiro, who's pretty popular this week. So definitely a race to watch.
Yeah. And she got close last time in
and
an
striking
election
distance.
That was not very good overall for Democrats. 2026 could be a much more favorable environment to run in. Plus, now she's got the name recognition, having run once already. Of course, she hasn't won her primary yet.
Yeah.
But that is if Democrats are going to retake the House, it's going to be districts like that that make it happen.
Yeah. Folks are teeing up ready for the midterm. So third story, a new app allows Philadelphians to snitch on people who may be violating parking rules by simply taking a photo and sending that photo to the Philadelphia Parking Authority. This app is called Laser Vision, and it streamlines the process for reporting parking violators that block bike lanes or sidewalk access. They're very annoying people who do that, right?
Yes.
And in the past,
we've probably all been those annoying people.
I probably have been that person, of course. And in the past, you had to manually type in the make and model of the violating vehicle. You had to put in the location, and you had to put this in a form for PPA. But now, all you got to do is take the picture, and the app will read all the details on the image, automatically fills out the reporting form, and the user can make any corrections, and they send it to PPA, and they said it's been done in as low as 15 seconds. Okay.
So you could just be left and right.
Boom, boom, bam.
Violating people. Yeah.
Snitching. Okay. And so if the report is sent during PPA patrol hours, somebody can go and give them an actual ticket. And if it's after hours, they can just up patrols in certain areas that is kind of notorious for blocking you know, bike lanes and such. And so in just 2 weeks of beta testing, 1,200 reports have already been turned in. And by the way, in New York, they allow people to get paid to snitch on folks. You get 25% of any tickets or fines.
If you report someone.
If you report someone in New
York. You get a cut.
Yes. And wow. That's for their idling law. So I don't know. In Philly, I don't know if that would work, but would you snitch on someone, Avi Wolfman Ahrens?
Before I get to that, I will answer that question.
Ooh, bated breath. Can't wait.
I just want a hat tip whoever came up with the name Laser Vision for
this
app.
It's kind of cool, yeah.
Very catchy. This is an app that allows you to fill out a form. Very mundane thing, but you call it Laser Vision. It sounds awesome. Mm-hmm. So hat tip on whoever called it Laser Vision. I would use this app. I would indeed snitch. I don't think I would go around doing it willy-nilly, but there are some consistent violators mm-hmm. in my neighborhood. You know who you are. You're blocking the curb cuts. You're making it hard for people to get around. If I see you doing it 3, 4, 5 times, I might have to pull out the app. I might have to.
And snitch.
Mm. Well, you didn't answer the question.
I mean, it depends. How bad? I know.
So I have to answer the whole question and you get away with it.
Repeat violators. I agree with repeat violators. We'll be right back after the break.
What a dodge. And welcome back to Studio 2 here at WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. The kids are not all right. That's the unmistakable conclusion of a study released this month in a leading scientific journal. The study's authors measured the health of American children across 16 years and 170 medical indicators.
And nearly across the board, the researchers found American children today are less healthy. Mental health, physical health, chronic disease, death, all trending in the wrong direction.
And that's not just a problem for America's children. These trends may suggest there's a widening tear in America's healthcare fabric. And with us today to discuss the study is its senior author, Dr. Christopher Forrest. He is professor of pediatrics and the director of the Applied Clinical Research Center at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Chris, welcome to Studio 2.
Well, thanks for having me.
We're so happy to have you. And we want to ask our listeners and viewers a couple of important questions this hour. Why do you think kids are less healthy than they were 20 years ago? And what should we do to improve the physical and mental health of young people in the U.S.? Give us a call, 888-477-9499, email studio2@whyy.org. If you're on YouTube, hello, drop a comment right there in the YouTube chat.
And so, Chris, we want to jump right in. I mean, this new CHOP study is one of the most comprehensive looks at children's health in decades. And so we want you to explain, what did you look at and what made you want to sound the alarm?
Let me start with the second question first. When I was a resident at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, it was actually rare to see a child in the primary care clinics with a chronic condition. And pediatricians across the country had been noticing kids have been looking sicker and sicker, but there just wasn't that comprehensive study that took a big picture look at what's happening to kids. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention puts out reports on obesity and mental health, but no one looked at mortality, chronic conditions, puberty, sleep, physical symptoms, anxiety.
And so that's all I'm going to study this one thing or that one thing.
It was the whole picture. Yeah. It was the whole picture. And the results are really sobering because across all of those domains, mm-hmm. health has been declining.
Yeah. And so what exactly, you mentioned all these different things. What was the thing that sort of sounded the alarm for you?
It wasn't any single thing. It was the totality. So mm-hmm. in this country, kids are 80% more likely to die than kids in peer nations in Europe and Asia. That works out to be about 54 more kids dying per day here than in other countries.
Wow.
Kids are almost 50% likely to have a chronic condition. It's physical conditions, mental conditions, developmental disorders. 1 in 5 kids are obese. 1 in 7 girls now are going through puberty before age 12. And kids are sleeping less. And that decline actually started in 1905. And then finally, kids are experiencing not just more anxiety and depressive symptoms, but more menstrual symptoms, more skin-related symptoms, and more pain.
What does that tell you as a doctor and a researcher?
It says that there's a vulnerability in kids that is very deeply seated, that the ecosystems, we call it the developmental ecosystems, where kids grow up and where they learn, is really collapsing. And so it won't be a single solution. I'm glad we're talking about solutions today. It won't mm-hmm. be a single one. it'll actually be our society coming together at all levels to address the crisis.
Yeah. And when you look at this, you know, because Avi and I, we were well over 20 years old here, but I just wonder what sort of change. Was it a collective change? Is there one thing? Or was it a series of things that has sort of shifted that got us to this place?
It's a series of things. I mean, if we start looking deeply, you know, it's one place people like to look is what's going on with kids' behavioral choices. It's the same as adults. Activity, sleep, stress, food are all really important, and those are not necessarily lifestyle choices that kids and families are making appropriately. There's room for improvement. But I want to point out there are two other dimensions of kids' health at that kind of first level that are really important. Mm-hmm. The first is mom's health. Mm-hmm. Healthy women become healthy pregnant women. Healthy pregnant women have healthy babies. We have a crisis of low birth weight and prematurity in this country, and that really reflects mom's health. And mom's health is really a women's health issue. So I want to make sure that when we talk about kids' health, we're also thinking about women's health. And then the sixth dimension that's unique to kids is play. Kids need to go outside and play. They need to play with other kids. They need to create games on their own. That's part of their development. It's part of their ability to learn how to control their emotions. I like to say the most important success factor for a kid is whether they can become a good friend. You learn how to be a good friend, not on social media, but by interacting with other kids and negotiating all that turmoil sometimes that happens between friends.
So when I saw this data, when I mm-hmm. saw the study, and I tried to imagine what the causes might be, I thought about things like broken healthcare system, broken food system, stuff we've talked about on this show, many other shows talk about. The problem is that a lot of that stuff hasn't really changed that drastically over the last 20 years. You know, our healthcare system in America compared to other developed nations was always quite different. Our food system, again, I'm sure there's been some change, but not, to my eye, some sort of like crazy wholesale change that would expect, that would predict these trend lines all going in a negative direction. So help me navigate that, because the causes that I would try to isolate here all seem like things that have been around for a while and wouldn't explain a downtick in the last 20 years.
I think our tendency to try to find single items or a couple of things that if we could just fix those things, then the whole problem is going to go away. And that's not what's going on here. This is really a collapse of the entire ecosystem. So we've talked about the behavioral stuff and mom's health. And you just talked about things like the food environment. But think about the neighborhoods that we have today versus 20 years ago.
Yeah.
There's been a complete collapse of social capital. People have retreated inward. People have retreated into their homes. They don't feel that it's safe outside. How many times do you see
Wouldn't that be happening around the world, though? Like, why would that be happening more in America?
I can't answer that question. I mean, I have a brother in Denmark, and kids are free range in Denmark. I can tell you that right now. A couple of other important differences between some of the Scandinavian and European countries. His wife had a year off when the child was born. Mm-hmm. There's excellent childcare. In fact, childcare professionals is actually a profession that people want to go into. There are bridges. There are the bridges for everybody, from when the mom delivers the baby to becoming a parent to going back to work and then moving prepared, ready to start school into school systems. That's a big difference. I also think, Avi, that there's been increasing amounts of stress. I would, it's kind of like the hidden thing that's hard to see. Our kids are stressed out. Mm-hmm. They're anxious. They're depressed. Our families are stressed out. It's very hard to be a family and raising kids in 2025. There's a lot of financial strain. 1 in 7 families are living in poverty, and almost double that number are living close to the poverty line. That makes it very challenging. So I would say it's the confluence of all these things occurring simultaneously and worsening, creating more development.
But you're a data guy. Yeah. You're a stats guy, right? It's like the confluence of a lot of things happening at once seems unlikely, right? Your mind just wants to. Maybe mm-hmm. this is the mind wanting something that doesn't exist. But you want to think there has to be something driving all this at once. It can't be like 30 independent things that all happen to be converging in this last 20 years. That's the way I think about it, at least.
I think it can be 30 things converging over the last
30 years. Really? We've made 30 independent mistakes.
Yeah. I mean, exactly. And it gets to our value system. If we really
value... But maybe that's the common thing.
Yeah. I think that is the common thing. If you really look deep, it's what is the value system in this country that allows kids to live in poverty, that doesn't invest. You know, the Iroquois Nation looks at everything they do with regard to seven generations later. We look at how it's going to what's going to happen the next year or two, right? So there's not that long-termism that other countries have. They're willing to invest in kids. They're willing to invest in the early years. We also have an adult centrism. Yeah. Neighborhoods are built for adults. They're built for cars. They're not built for kids to go out and play. And then there's another, I think, even more insidious value. I'll call it economism. Looking at everything through the lens of how is it going to generate more revenue? What is its financial worth? The gross domestic product, the GDP, is sort of the god, right, for the economy. Well, what if we also had a GDP called the gross developmental potential, where everything that we did as a society was look at the financial, but look at how it's affecting kids' developmental potential. Yeah. So to me, Avi, it's really the root cause is the value system in this country that is substantively different from other countries.
Because when you invest in kids, you might not see the result of that investment for many years to come. I want to make sure I invite you, our listeners, to participate in the conversation. Why do you think kids are less healthy than 20 years ago? And what should we do to improve the physical and mental health of young people in the United States? You can call 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube, keep those comments coming in our live chat. David says, I wish every school in the U.S. could have a child mental health specialist to work alongside the school nurse. Every child should see the specialist every quarter. G comments, lack of regular exercise and poor diet with far too many processed foods and artificially sweetened beverages are major factors. I want to bring in Becky from Bronegat Light, who's on the line. Becky, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi, thank you so much. My comment is, and I'm an adult with no children by choice, but lots of nieces and nephews and grandnieces and nephews. And when I see what kids are eating or not eating, the lack of proper nutrition is played heavily in my mind as what a cause for many issues today. I mean, you go out and you see kids eating fried this, fried that, and no green things on their plates. So I think they're missing vital vitamins and minerals and just what they're not eating. And then all the junk food, too. Yeah. That's my comment. Thank you for this program. It's exceptional.
Yeah, thanks so much, Becky. I wanted to ask you because, you know, I want to kind of pivot a little bit and talk about Make America Healthy Again. Mm-hmm. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., our Secretary of Health, you know, raised some of the issues with nutrition, this ultra processed food. A lot of people globbed onto that and really agree. Also, he's talked about too many vaccines with young people. I mean, and they've been sort of sounding the alarm as well. Can you talk about nutrition, how that has shifted and you know, how that sort of, you know, rolls into this overall, you know, declining health among our young people?
There's no question that nutrition is very important. You see it in the obesity rates, but also insidiously, we also saw increasing rates of nutritional deficiencies that lead to anemia. So what we have is a food environment that's providing very calorie-dense food, highly processed, as well as nutrient-poor. And that, obviously, is another thing that's been happening over the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. The food may look the same, but the nutritional value has been declining, and there are a lot of reasons
for
that.
And that's a tough one to see sometimes, too, because, of course, I talk to my parents, and they're like, yeah, we drank Tang and canned vegetables and Salisbury steak, but it's possible still to have gotten worse than that.
That's right. And in fact, your broccoli and your Salisbury steak probably had higher nutritional value when you were growing up than they do right now. So, Sherry, I think that the nutritional environment is really important. It's important for pregnant women as it is for kids. It's changed a lot. So I think that's something that the MAHA report got absolutely right, that we have to change that environment. We have to reduce the amount of ultra-processed food, sweetened beverages. We know that kids don't need that. There are many healthier alternatives.
Yeah, and sort of before I go back to you know, digging more into that MAHA report, I wanted to ask you about these chronic illnesses that you're seeing, because that was a red flag to me, that the large number of young people getting these diseases, yet at the same time, the number of people getting asthma, the number of kids with asthma is going down. What are you seeing?
Yeah, so we're seeing physical, mental, and developmental disorders increasing. On the physical side, we're seeing things like elevated cholesterol, hyperlipidemia
for kids.
That's largely related to obesity. The anemia story I just mentioned. More hearing loss. That may be from using earbuds and, you know, high intensity sound. Also, more nearsightedness. Kids need to be outdoors, seeing the outdoor environment in order to, for their vision to develop healthily. When kids are reading books all the time, which is great, but they need to balance that with being outside and on the screen, their vision is affected. It's estimated that by 2050, half of kids will be nearsighted.
And the physical limitations as well?
Physical limitations, about 1 in 10 kids have a limitation in their ability to just do the everyday thing in life, play and go to school, largely due to developmental disorders like ADHD, developmental delay, learning disabilities, and autism.
Yeah.
And then the mental health stories, I think, is pretty well established.
Yeah.
Let me read in this statistic here. From 2011 to 2023, the prevalence of 13 to 17-year-old children with a chronic condition rose from 25% to 31%. Mm-hmm. Pretty striking.
Yeah.
Sean on YouTube says, one major barrier for me and my wife to let our kids go out and play is we feel like we are putting the burden of parenting our kids on other parents in the neighborhood. We have recently worked through them going through with them going out on their own. My 8-year-old was able to figure out getting his bike chain back on his bike without adult help. Way to go, 8-year-old. Here's another comment. It's actually a question from YouTube. Kelly wants to know, Chris, are there particular years where you saw a drastic decline, or has there been a steady decline in children's health throughout time? Of course, you're looking at different variables, but that Kelly, it's a really interesting question from Kelly, because one thing I noted is that the studies years go back to 2007, I think, to 2023. Right. And what happened right after 2007? Huge economic crash. So did you see certain periods where it seemed to be getting really bad, maybe recovering a little? Let's go into that.
We didn't. We looked at the Great Recession and we looked at the pandemic. In general, we didn't, but there are some exceptions. Kids' mental health clearly declined in the pandemic. Now, there was a slight uptick with social media, but the kids' anxiety and depressive symptoms and developmental disorders were already on the rise, even before social media. So I think that social media may have been a contributor, an accelerator, but it's not the entire story. In fact, kids' mortality, like that's the ultimate, that we should be able to keep our kids alive. In the 1960s and 70s, kids in this country were just as likely to die as kids in Europe and Asia. And it was around the neoliberal turn in our country with the decline of our safety net and also sort of what David Leonhardt calls, you know, rough and tumble capitalism, that we start to see kids die at a higher rate in this country.
And let's talk about the deaths, because violence was a big part of what is killing our young people. How does this sort of mean that kids are not necessarily dying from sicknesses, but from gun violence? Can you sort of parse through what is actually causing the deaths?
Yeah, the deaths in older kids are caused largely by injury-related phenomena, and you might say violence as well. Number one cause, guns. 15 times more likely to die from a gun in this country than in Europe. Second is car crashes. I think kids are in cars a lot more. You know, you go to other countries and there's much more public transportation. A third cause, homicide, largely due to guns. And a fourth cause is substance use. But the biggest cause of death overall from ages birth to 20 is prematurity. Kids being born early. And that gets back to, I think it's very important to say, mom's health, which is really about women's health. Healthy women produce healthy babies.
Let me read this comment from Gloria, who says, lack of universal health care, lack of support for kids and mothers, too many guns. We can learn from European countries and their safety nets and values. Yaroslav on YouTube says, it takes a village to raise a child. Speaking of that concept, village, child, a lot of what we're talking about here, in my mind, traces back to public health. You need a public health solution. It's not about acute illness so much as trying to cast a big net and make incremental improvements in lots of people's lives. Do we have an adverse attitude toward public health in this country? Is there something about our value system that makes public health especially challenging here?
Public health is essentially being attacked right now over the last several years. The public health infrastructure was already weak, and now it's been weakened. So, Avi, I completely agree with you that we need community-oriented responses. That's not done by one person at a time.
Yeah.
it's not even all only done by public health infrastructures. I think a lot of what we need is more engagement. I like to say families need to engage with each other to create their neighborhoods where they can have kids play safely, yeah. where kids can go outside and develop healthfully. Communities need to be, we need to engage with our communities to check out what are the chemicals. That's another issue, Sherry, in the Maha report, the chemical mm-hmm. environment. We really have no idea what these 350,000 chemicals that have been developed are doing to kids, as well as removing the guns from our communities. Yeah. We're awash with guns. The availability of handguns is leading to the firearm deaths and the homicide.
Yeah, by the way, Bros a Fan on YouTube says people are using more pesticides in their homes and yards, air fresheners, fragrance, personal care products increasingly expose kids to endocrine disrupting chemicals, which can cause cancer and hormonal issues. I wanted to go back to that Maha report a little bit because you mentioned that there are some things you agree with. Are there things that you disagree with from this Maha report?
I was really pleased to see that there was attention being paid to children's health and that there's a call for a crisis in kids' health. I thought that was a very important statement. I think that the analysis was very superficial. For example, there's no mention of firearms. There's no mention of injuries. There's no mention of homicides. There's no mention of substance use. There's not really a mention of mother's health or the pandemic that we have around prematurity. So I think it was limited but important. Our study goes well beyond that. It has a number of different indicators that the Maha report didn't have available. Also, when you read the Maha report, it seems somewhat stilted in its language. I wondered whether there was some computerized help in the development of that report.
Mm. Yeah. Let me bring in another caller. Mm-hmm. This is Frank from Trenton, who has a question that I actually had on my list. I'm going to let Frank ask it because I think this is really an important mm-hmm. point of interrogation when we're considering this entire report. So Frank from Trenton, you're on Studio 2. Hit us with your question, which I already think is a great question. So don't let me down, Frank.
So the question I have is, I'm wondering if the diagnoses that we're having and the uptick in the diagnoses is based off of better science and better diagnostic tools.
Yeah. Or changes in definition even, right?
Yeah.
So that's a great...
Yeah, or change.
Yeah, go ahead. Thanks so much, Frank, from Trenton. That's a very straightforward question there. Is there something in the way we are diagnosing and catching illnesses that could explain changes in statistics here?
One of the reasons why we looked at 8 different data sets was for this very issue, for this very concern, that it may be, for example, physicians are more likely now to diagnose autism. Parents yep. may be more likely to bring their kids to a physician to get a diagnosis of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. So I think it's pretty well established that some of the increase is due to increased recognition, which might be appropriate.
And could be a good thing.
And that's what I'm saying.
Especially
it might be appropriate.
With like anxiety right. and depression, things right. that people didn't really...
Talk about
years ago.
But we also looked at kids' reports of their own symptoms, what they're experiencing, their lived experiences. And there's no question they're experiencing more anxiety and they're being diagnosed with more anxiety. They're experiencing more depressive symptoms and they're being diagnosed with more depression. So it's that kind of triangulation of physician diagnosis, patient reports, as well as some of the causes of death that led us to believe it wasn't all physician diagnosis and increased recognition.
And then certainly something tools. Like increases in death, that you can't explain that away.
You
with
can't
diagnosis.
Explain that away. Yeah. Exactly right. That's exactly right. That's one of the reasons why we threw that in there.
Yeah. And we're on the other side. We're about to go to a break, but we're going to talk about solutions, policy solutions,
great.
Individual solutions, community solutions, Chris, that you talked about, because it takes a village. And by the way, we want to encourage you, our listeners, to participate in the conversation. Our questions of the day are this: why do you think kids are less healthy than 20 years ago? What should we do to improve the physical and mental health of young people in the United States? Our number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And thanks to everyone watching on YouTube. Put those questions and comments in the live chat. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. If you are just joining us, we're talking about the alarming state of kids' health in America. a long list of chronic physical conditions, reports of anxiety, depression, sleep issues, obesity, all of them trending upwards. This comes from a recent study led by researchers at CHOP.
And Dr. Chris Forrest is with us in our studio. He's a professor of pediatrics and the director of the Applied Clinical Research Center at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, and he is the study's lead researcher.
We're asking you this hour, why do you think kids are less healthy than they were 20 years ago? What should we do to improve the physical and mental health of young people in the U.S.? Give us a call, 888-477-9499, email studio2@whyy.org. If you're on YouTube, drop a comment in the chat.
So, Chris, the causes of this are very complex. You said they come from 30 different places.
Yeah.
But there can be some clear solutions. And you said we need to treat childhood health like we treat climate crisis and that we need an ecosystem level shift. I want you to sort of explain, where do we start?
I think we start with the what I'll call the proximate causes, the food, activity, stress, sleep, maternal health, and play. We have control over that. We can start immediately to improving the amount of physical activity that kids get, the amount of free-range play that they get, meaning outside, unsupervised by adults. We can also start to think about how we're defining success for kids. One of the most stress-inducing times of a child's life, middle school and high school.
Mm-hmm.
You just can't ever be as successful as the person next to you or as the school wants you to be or as your parents want to be. What if as a society, as families, we redefine success around your social-emotional development? How good of a friend are you? Are you contributing to society? So I think that's a very important piece, as well as, I just got to put a plug in this, school start time. School start time is one of the major contributors, in my view, of kids not sleeping well.
You're saying it's too early.
Yeah.
Way too early.
Yeah.
We know that teenagers need to get up around 8:30, start school 9 or 10. And there are some studies that are now showing that even if you end school at the same time, learning is just as good.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, addressing sleep, addressing the amount of stress in kids' lives, their activity, the food environment we also talked about, getting kids out and playing, helping women become healthy by, you know, better primary care for women, better access to primary care, universal access to prenatal care. Those are simple things that we can do now.
Yeah. Well, that is a lot, though.
Yeah, it does. It's a list.
As someone who literally goes by the tag name Skeptic on YouTube says, your guest is spot on, and sadly, I feel it's going to get much worse before a meaningful social commitment to change is seen from institutions and the populace. And I think this goes back to something we talked about earlier, which is at the core of the American idea is a focus on individual rights and liberty.
Yeah.
And that partially might explain why we have so many guns. It partially might explain why we don't assent to taxes that would create the revenue needed to implement all these big scale public health programs. Is there a way to actually fix that, sort of the individualism at the core of the American idea that might be difficult to square with some of the solutions we might need here?
Yeah, I think that is a big challenge because it kind of gets counterbalanced in other countries with communalism, where some countries have built right into their constitution equity, making sure that we are building a society, building a community for everyone. Consistent with the notion of individualism is freedom, the ability to pursue opportunities. So I think the secret sauce here is to focus on opportunities, what Amartya Sen talked about as our capabilities, everybody having the capability to be the person they want to be. And
you're talking about reframing the debate almost, or reframing the conversation in American language that might appeal more to our
make
core values.
Make people care, yeah.
That's why we need people like you.
We have to
change the narrative. We have to change the dialogue. We have to change the language. I firmly believe, even if we focus on those six issues I talked about, the proximate causes, we'll just shift right back to where we were unless we change the cultural value system that we've got.
Mm-hmm. I want to bring in Ada from Flemington, who's on the line. Ada, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Okay, what I'm going to say is I'm a grandmother, and what I'm seeing is the stress that's on my children in terms of work. and in terms of allotting time for work versus time for children. In Europe, parents can take off a year, 2 years after children are born. Here, parents have to rush back to work right away, and the demands of work go past 9 to 5. And then in that sense, it makes it harder to take care of your children and give your children the attention they need.
Yeah, that's Ada from Flemington. And I think, Chris, you talked about that a little bit. Look, if the parents are not healthy, if they're stressed out, that sort of passes down to the kids, right?
Right. Kids, from the moment they're born, need a responsive caregiver, somebody that they look at them, they respond to their needs, love and caring. When you're a stressed out parent, it's very hard to be responsive. And by that way, that responsiveness that we've all seen with babies, when they look at you, you look at them, they coo at you, you coo back at them, that goes all the way into adulthood. You need a caring, responsive environment within the family. And the caller is absolutely right. It's just become so hard for families to provide that because of the external stress kids are suffering. So in some ways, this report is about children's health, but some of the solutions are going to be about promoting family health.
Yeah.
We've been talking about stronger communities as one potential solution here, and we want to talk now about building resilience and a sense of community for kids. So we have invited Heather Plasteris to join us. She is the executive director of Girls on the Run Philadelphia, which is our chapter of a national nonprofit that's been making a difference for almost 30 years. Heather Plasteris, thank you so much for joining us this hour on Studio 2.
Hi, thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you. And I know you're right there on the ground trying to get kids to embrace healthier values, healthier lifestyle, build a community for them to grow those traits and those habits. What have you seen over the last, let's say, 5-10 years in terms of the young people that you work with?
Yes, Avi, thanks for that question. We are seeing, I can only speak to what I see in our program, and I see that more and more families want their kids to participate in a program like ours. We are really focused on combining, you know, Chris mentioned the social emotional development and friendship with the physical activity, both of which we see as being equally as important. And we have seen increasing demand for our program definitely in the last 5 to 10 years.
And so, Heather, tell us about your program. How does it work? And then give us a story of a child you've seen sort of transform once they've been able to join the community and be a part of the mission.
Yeah, so our program is meant to inspire kids to be joyful and healthy and confident. And we do that by using a experience-based curriculum that creatively integrates running or just movement. We say running, it could be walking, anything that gets kids moving. I'll give you an example. We have a young woman who was a middle school participant in sixth grade at Masterman. Many of you might know. Mm-hmm. She spoke at our annual fundraising gala this year. She's now a student at the University of Pennsylvania, and she talked a lot about not having ever thought of herself as an athletic person, but the community that she built with her team at Girls on the Run made her feel, number one, that she had the confidence to do it and that she could set goals and achieve them. So part of our program, the kids work up to, at the end of the program, they run a 5K.
Wow.
So for her, having that at the end of the program was at first daunting and unrealistic goal for her, but as she, you know, continued to meet with her team and her coaches over the course of our season, she made progress, she set her goals, she worked toward it, and to hear her talk about crossing the 5K finish line with an absolute glow on her face, it really is impactful.
Speaking of glow on the face, a lot of kids these days means the glow of the smartphone, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Aman says, we got to take away those smartphones. If need be, give them one of those internet-free flip phones for emergencies. I am curious what you hear like students in the program say about their phones, about social media, and if that has perhaps inspired them to want to be a part of something that actually happens in the real world with real people face-to-face.
Absolutely. I think, you know, I hear from our coaches, who are the ones actually implementing the program in the schools in Philadelphia, that it's definitely, it's a contrast, right, between what they're seeing on social media, on their phones, and what they're experiencing in a program like ours, where kids are coming together. They are in different grades. They may not have known any of these other kids in, you know, if they're a third grader, they don't know these fifth graders, but they're coming together toward a common goal. They're learning together, supporting each other, building confidence, talking about, you know, how to choose a good friend and be a good friend, and building those kind of relationships in real life. Yeah. And I think that that definitely creates a contrast with what's happening in the device in their hand.
Yeah, thank you so much. That's Heather Plasteris, Executive Director of Girls on the Run Philadelphia. Heather, thank you so much for giving your perspective on Studio 2.
Absolutely. Thanks for talking about this.
Yes. And on YouTube, Colleen comments, kids need to go outside and play more. Still at 23, being outside in the sun greatly helps my mental health. Mary says there are not enough places for kids to go and sports and classes are too expensive. I want to bring in another caller. We have Don from Valley, PA on the line. Don, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Yes. My wife is a paraprofessional. She's a basically a sort of like a student aide that is teacher's aide that mm-hmm. is able to be able to set up the children and help them focus with certain tasks that like with autistic kids, she's yeah. very good at that. But what she's seen mostly, what is affecting most of the children's health and well-being is their environment at home. You know, some of them are going to school so that they can eat. Mm-hmm. You know, some of them are there because their parents don't want them to be anywhere near them while they're at home doing things. You know what I'm saying? It's that social parenting that is basically causing a lot of these kids to have social anxiety, to feel they can't make friends or any type of thing,
yeah.
and Thanks. Causing this.
Yeah, Don, we just have to wrap it up because we're toward the end of the
thank
show,
you,
but
Don.
Thank you so much. That's Sorry. Don in Valley, Pennsylvania. So what are your, let's get some concluding thoughts here, Chris. Mm-hmm. You've been listening to a lot here, sitting, taking it all in. Where can we start? Honestly, like, where can we start? I know you mentioned those domains, but like mm-hmm. even maybe more basic than that. We've just heard an avalanche of data.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Where should we start?
I think that we need two things. The first is that we need to have a clear-eyed agreement that there's a crisis in child health. Let's just state the problem, all right? So these data that mm-hmm. we put together do that. The MAHA report does that. We need our politicians to start stating it as well so that we all agree there's a crisis in child health. Mm-hmm. Because I think the solutions... Avi, we've talked about some that are going to be really challenging, but the immediate solutions, that six-pronged effort I talked about, are actually readily apparent. People know about that. So that's the second piece. The third piece is, I think, if I had a wand and I was a czar, I would say,
go ahead, wand us.
I would wand you with, let's support families. Mm-hmm. Let's get mothers universal prenatal care. Let's get universal publicly sponsored parental leave. There's no question that those early years set the trajectory for the rest of life. And then we need high quality, available, accessible childcare.
Yep.
You do those three things and we get an engaged community to start coming together.
Hardcore focus, it sounds like, on those first 5 years.
Yeah. Just first 5 years.
Laser in
even,
on that.
Even the earlier, the first 3 years, the first 1,000 days.
And so as we wrap up, how do we sort of make this a priority? And I hate to say that childhood health or child health should be political, but a lot of it is. So if how do we sort of make this the number one priority as we move forward?
You know, I think it comes from families. I think families have to start raising this as the number one issue and engaging with each other and engaging with their community and our politicians. It has to be a ground up kind of thing. This is not going to be a president or a senator. It's going to really come from us.
And that was Dr. Chris Forrest, Professor of Pediatrics, Director of the Applied Clinical Research Center at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, and lead researcher on this study that just came out in JAMA that shows that children's health in America has been in decline now for about 20 years.
Yeah.
Chris, thanks so much for the time today on Studio 2.
My pleasure.
By the way, Maureen comments, I have been a public school educator for 28 years. We cannot talk about student stress and depression without talking about neoliberal education reforms of the past two decades. Common Core state standards and the required standardized assessments have caused some of these issues. Lots of stress, even in the schools. So.
And I do have to just correct something I said earlier, by the way. This is, I had mentioned that my mom and my parents drank Tang and whatnot growing up. My mom texted me and wants me to clarify that it was her drinking the Tang, not me. I was not raised on Tang. Mom, you did a wonderful job. It was all fruits and nuts and berries in the house. Thank you so much, Mom.
Reed, she's not
I had you going there for a second there.
Heavy word. I was like, oh my goodness, you were not raised on Tang. I
don't know
that.
If I've ever had Tang, to be quite honest. I've had Tang, Kool-Aid, I've had Capri Sun, but was at other people's houses.
By the way, thank you to our producers. The show is produced by Debbie Bilder, Paige Murray Bessler, and Andreas Copes. Mike Schiffler is our visual producer. Al Banks and Tina Calicay engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCrory. From Studio 2 at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. Thank you so much for joining us, and we will talk to you tomorrow.